third series of the HE Knowledge Hub podcast, brought to you by Next Step Southwest, or NSSW. Today I'm speaking with Stacey May Fox, who works for the Student Loans Company England, and we'll be discussing student finance. We spoke a couple of years ago and you gave us a comprehensive rundown of how student finance works. And here we are again in March 2024, which brings me to my first question, which is, why is it that student finance changes and the changes are the amounts you can borrow? I believe we're still on plan 5. And what does that even mean? There's a lot of questions in there, but I'm sure you can give us some answers.
Yeah, no problem at all. So potentially it sort of depends on what element of student finance we're talking about. As hopefully you know, and just to make sort of any new students aware, tuition fee loan amounts haven't actually changed. So they remain at the maximum of £9,250 for your full-time undergrad course. And that's the same figure that they have remained at for the last 7 years. However, when it comes to sort of the additional products such as maintenance loan, you're right, they do change. Partly the reason that they do change is because when making decisions on student finance, the government do have to ensure that considerations are made on whether the system remains financially sustainable, but also to ensure that the costs of higher education are shared fairly between students and taxpayers, not all of whom who have benefited from going to university. They also have to base the annual increases on forecasted inflation. So as a result, as announced in a government statement on the 25th of January 2024, maintenance loan rates have increased by 2.5% for the academic year 24-25. We have also seen a 2.5% increase in the maximum amounts for our other products, so things like Disabled Students Allowance and the Grants for Dependents range, which are consist of the Parents Learning Allowance, the Adult Dependent Grant, as well as Childcare Grants. As you've mentioned, Plan 5 was introduced in academic year 23-24, and that applies for new SFE students. And I am able to confirm that Plan 5 will also apply to any new students starting in the upcoming academic year, which is known as 24-25. Plan 5 itself was introduced by the government as part of the repayments reform, the main aim being to lessen the burden of student loans on the taxpayer and reducing the interest rates for new students starting from 2023, so that under these terms, graduates do not pay back any more than they originally borrowed in real terms. The government did actually publish a blog where they explore these reforms in more detail. As we only have limited time on today's podcast, I won't be able to run through it in its entirety, but the blog can be accessed if you look at educationhub.gov.uk, get the facts about student loan reforms, then there's a wealth of information that can be accessed there.
Thank you. If I rewound, as you say, for new students who might not have any idea how they even start by going about applying for a loan, how do they start their application? Is it online? Where would they go to do that?
So yeah, the best and the easiest way to apply for student finance is to apply online via gov.uk. You can literally Google SFE, apply for finance, and that will take you through. Or alternatively, if you want the direct link, it's www.gov.uk/apply-online-for-students-finance, and that will take you directly through. Currently it's only the full-time undergraduate applications that are live, as postgraduate and part-time applications tend to launch a little later in the year. But for now, both SFE, SFW and SFINN, and full-time undergraduate students can now apply for their student finance. As ever, we would encourage students to apply as soon as possible because we do want to ensure that they have their funding in place for when they start university. I'd also like to take the opportunity to remind students that they don't actually need a confirmed place at university or college in order to apply for their finance. They can literally stipulate their current preferred choice, and if they change their mind later on, they just need to let us know and we can update that accordingly. Likewise, as students are debating whether or not to maybe take a gap year, they can apply now with their preferred choice, and if they do decide to take that year out, we can cancel that application so that no funds are paid to the student and their funding entitlement remains for when they do decide to continue with that education journey.
Oh, that's great information to know, that it's so flexible. Is there a deadline for having to make the application?
There is. It's normally stated on the SFE website. I believe this year it's normally sort of mid to end of May. That doesn't mean that you can't apply after deadline. Of course, you are able to continue to apply for your finance. I think sort of up to 9 months within the course start date. However, if you apply after deadline, there's no guarantee that that funding is going to be in place for when you start uni. So reiterating on that former point, is really the reason why we encourage early applications. You want to make sure that your funding is in place so that when you start university, obviously you're able to pay for your rent and your travel and things like that. So not the end of the world if you apply in June, for example. I'd strongly encourage you to apply as soon as possible just to make sure that those funds are ready for you.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. So, yeah, just to avoid unnecessary stress, I suppose.
Yeah, it's the main thing, isn't it? When it comes to your finance, you want that in place as soon as possible. And then that's less stress on the student, and you can concentrate on making new friends, starting your new life, and starting your education journey without having to sort of worry about the finance element.
Yeah, absolutely. Earlier you said that the maintenance loan and other products will be going up by 2.5%. Are you able to tell us the exact figures for what the maintenance loan will now be?
Yeah, of course. So with the maintenance loan, that's obviously to help students with their living costs. And the amount that eligible students actually receive can be based on a few factors. The main ones being where you reside whilst you study, as well as your household income. So to summarise these sort of four main categories, if you will, we have something called the parental home rate. That is for those who reside at the parental home whilst they are studying. The maximum rate for a full-time student who is not receiving benefits is going to be £8,610 for the upcoming academic year. We also have what we call the elsewhere rate, and that's for students who reside away from the parental home, but outside of London. The maximum amount that those students can get is £10,227. We also have the London rate, and that is for students who reside away from the parental home but inside of London. The maximum amount is going to be £13,348. And then we also have something called the overseas rate, and that is for students who are studying overseas as part of their UK-based course. And the maximum amount there is going to be £11,713. It's slightly different if students are entitled to benefits, for example, if they're in receipt of universal credit. In that instance, there's actually more money in the pot available to them in the form of maintenance. Those on benefits, their maintenance loan also consists of what we call a special support element, and that just means that a certain amount of their total loan is actually disregarded by the DWP when reassessing their new sort of entitlement to benefits. So very similar in regards to the categories. So for those entitled to benefits, we have the parental home rate again. The maximum in that instance is actually going to be £10,158. For those entitled to benefits that are residing elsewhere but outside of London, the maximum is £11,658. For those away from the parental home but in London, is £14,557. And for those, again, who are entitled to benefit studying overseas as part of their UK-based course, the maximum they'll be entitled to is £13,038. There's a slightly different rate for those who are aged over 60 on the first day of the first academic year. Those students will get what we call a reduced rate maintenance loan, maximum amount being £4,327 for the upcoming academic year.
That's really interesting. I didn't know about this special support element before, and I think that would be very interesting to a lot of listeners. So thank you for that. So those are the maximum amounts that students could get. People might have heard the term means tested. I'll let you explain what that means, actually, what factors are considered within that.
Okay, perfect. So short answer is not all students will get the full amount. As mentioned, whilst the maintenance loan amount awarded to a student is based on where they reside whilst they study, it also depends on household income. And that's effectively what we mean by means tested. So every eligible student is entitled to something. So they will receive at least the non-income assessed amount that is then sort of topped up by the means tested amount, otherwise, or in other words, it's awarded based on the household income. So for those students who are classed as independent, by this I mean those who are care leavers or those who have estranged status, and that's just a couple of examples. There could be other variables which determine a student as independent, but they're probably the main ones. But those types of students will automatically be awarded the maximum amount of maintenance. Those students who have a household income that's less than £25,000 per year, they'll also receive the maximum amount of maintenance loan. However, as the household income amount increases, the amount of maintenance support awarded to the student will decrease. So just to give you a couple of examples in real terms, we'll use the elsewhere rate because that's probably the category that we get the biggest uptake for. If I am an elsewhere student studying outside of London, my family, my parents' household income, for example, is £25,000 and under. In that instance, I'm getting the maximum amount of £10,227. However, if my household income is £35,000, for example, then I would only be awarded £8,766. You will continue to see that sort of decrease in maintenance support available as that household income increases. And then, for example, if my household income is £65,000 and more, I would receive what we call the non-income assessed amount, which is £4,767 per year.
On our website, under the tab What is Higher Education and Student Finance, How it Works, I've actually put a chart that helps you sort of, if you know roughly what your household income is, you can sort of calculate what you would get.
Also a student finance calculator on gov.uk. So again, students can input what they believe their household income details are, and it will calculate and give them an approximation of what they can expect to receive.
Brilliant. We're talking about means tested, and obviously, so students are going to have to provide proof of what their parents or whomever they're living with in their application. What sort of documents does that include, and what would people need to do?
So the main one is really confirming a student's identity. It's the system itself has been improved over the last few years, in particular for British citizens. So gone are the days where we would ask people to send in their British passport, for example. Students can now actually confirm their identity by inputting their British passport details, and then we cross-reference that with His Majesty's Passport Office. If students don't have a passport, we can actually digitally upload their full UK birth certificates and use that as confirmation of their identity. For household income information that we request from the student sponsor, it's a lot easier again, in the sense that we are no longer asking for financial evidence from the last complete tax year. We can now actually take the national insurance number from the sponsor, and we will use that to double check the income with HMRC. And yes, so it's a lot easier now. Just to highlight a little bit of information around sponsors. So for those students who are aged under 25, in the majority, it's going to be your parents who are considered your sponsors. If you are under 25 but you're married, then it's going to be your partner who is considered your sponsor. And when it comes to students who are over 25, it's more dependent on your circumstance. So again, if you live with your partner, it's going to be your partner's income. However, if you live alone, or if you like share a house with flatmates or what have you, it's going to be your own individual sort of income circumstance. Unless obviously your partner is a student, in which case, again, it's predominantly sort of your own situation. And like I say, similarly, in that instance, we're no longer asking sponsors to provide the financial evidence. We have tried to make that process as pain-free as we possibly can. And as I say, now we're just trying to confirm income using the national insurance numbers.
That sounds really good, because although it was a very, very long time ago, I do remember my dad completely defacing an application form because he didn't understand what he was supposed to do. He's a teacher. So there we go. Yeah. They were tricky, and it sounds so much better now, being able to put national insurance number in rather than asking people for P60s and stuff. That is really really
so
good.
We're trying to avoid, I think, that mad sponsor run rush trying to dig through lots of financial records and evidence. Similarly with passports, I think that obviously with student finance applications launching when they do, historically when they would need to be posted, occasionally they didn't reach their destination, which isn't a great time to not have access to your passport in lieu of the summer holidays. So again, just being able to input your passport details and keep that passport with you has made life a lot easier for all, hopefully.
So the next question, one that can concern people, but could you tell us what the new repayment thresholds are? And I'm sure you can explain what the rate of interest is that is applied, and when do they start adding that to what you've borrowed?
So plan two and plan five repayment thresholds are actually going to remain the same as they did in academic year 23-24. Plan two is applicable to those who are classed as continuing students in academic year 23-24, and their threshold remains at £27,295. Plan five is obviously the one that we mentioned earlier and applies to all those considered as new students from academic year 23-24. So obviously that includes those who are due to start university in September this year. The Plan 5 threshold is currently £25,000, and the government have already confirmed that this threshold will be set at £25,000 until April 2027. Beyond that, we will then expect it to increase annually in line with inflation. It is important for students to remember that they don't need to start making repayments until the April following completion or withdrawal from their course. And even then, they will not start making repayments until they are earning over their threshold. default. Once they are earning over threshold, the repayments are based on 9% on what they have earned over that threshold. So a couple of examples. My name is Amelia. I am a Plan 5 student who has graduated. I'm now earning £25,000 per year. As I'm not earning over the threshold of 25K, I'm not actually going to be making any repayments. In another example, my name is Ella. I am a Plan 5 student who's graduated. I'm now earning £28,000 a year. As a result, I'm earning £3,000 over my threshold, so I pay 9% on that £3,000. Long story short, my monthly repayments are about £22 a month. Okay. The more I earn, obviously, the higher monthly repayment is going to be, but it's always based on 9% of what I earn over my threshold. It's also worth noting that student loans are not like commercial loans. And if your income drops below threshold, then your repayments also stop. When it comes to interest, Plan 5 interest is accrued as soon as you have the funds, so during study. Interest is accrued using something called the Retail Prices Index, otherwise known as RPI, because that's far too many syllables. But that RPI figure is set annually. So we take the figure from March, we then carry it forward and apply it from September. Interest can obviously affect how long it will take to repay your loan, but it doesn't affect your weekly, your monthly, or your yearly repayments because they are based on what you earn and not what you owe. It's also mentioning that there's something known as a write-off period. So for Plan 5 students, any outstanding balance that you have left 40 years after entering that repayment period does get sort of discarded. So it doesn't matter how much potentially you have left on your balance. If you have reached 40 years after entering repayment, that amount will be written off.
Sort of loan amounts are going up a bit and the repayment threshold is staying quite stable. So that is good news for students, isn't it?
Yes. So as we say, at the moment, we know that Plan 5 is staying the same till 2027. If, for example, that, and this is just an example, I'm not an economist, I have no idea what's going to happen with the UK economy in the future. But if, for example, I'm earning £28,000 currently on the 25k threshold, I'm paying £22. If that threshold then got raised to, I don't know, say £25,700, if I'm still earning the same amount, that actually means my monthly repayments will lessen, because obviously that threshold is higher. So in that instance, I may only pay £17 per month. So yeah, the great thing is that things are quite set at the moment. So we know what's happening over the next few years.
That's brilliant. It is really reassuring. And I'm so glad you were doing the math there, because I was beginning to think, oh, I'm going to get a question in a minute. Although that is some good news that we can share with everyone. You know, there are students who may still struggle, but as you touched on earlier in our conversation, there are other products available. You were talking about the Disabled Student Allowance and Grants for Dependents. Could you just expand a little bit on what those are and who might be eligible for those?
Yeah, of course. So as mentioned, we have a range of additional products, if you will, for students with disabilities or students with dependents. So for those who are eligible for Disabled Students Allowance, and it's worth noting that DSA covers a host of conditions. So it can cover things like learning difficulties, but it can also cover things like mental health. But for DSA, there is funding available to support students during both their undergraduate and their postgraduate study. The maximum amount for the upcoming academic year of 24-25 is actually £26,948. DSA is awarded annually and it is a grant, therefore it does not need to be repaid. For those students who have dependents, we have sort of three products effectively. So we've got the Parents Learning Allowance, and that is for students who are parents and may have a child in full-time education, for example. But in that instance, if they are eligible for Parent Learning Allowance, they can be awarded anywhere between £50 and £1,963. We also have something called the Adult Dependence Grants, and that is for students who have an adult dependent who is financially dependent on the student, but only if the dependee, if you will, is not earning sort of more than, I think it's like 3,500. But in that instance, the student will be awarded the Adult Dependence Grant and they can receive up to £3,438. We also have the childcare grant, and that is where Student Finance England will pay up to 85% of childcare costs with registered providers. It is capped at a maximum weekly amount, which for students with one child, the maximum they could receive a week is £193.62. And for those with two or more children, the maximum is £331.95 per week. Again, it is worth noting that the exact amount awarded to the student is based on household income, and again, that they are grants, so they do not need to be repaid. Other than sort of the SLC offerings of support, I would also encourage students to research other funding available to them in the form of bursaries and scholarships. Obviously, the majority are available directly from the universities that students are applying to and studying with. So normally you'll find that information out directly through the university and college. But there is also a site called the Scholarship Hub, which tries to collate a lot of the scholarships and bursaries onto one website. So just again, really reiterating that potentially there may be funding available elsewhere. But if it's outside of the sort of SLC world, I'm not the best person to advise. So I would just encourage students to do their research.
That's great. Thank you. I don't know if it was a conversation we had a few years ago. Was there a grant available for people called Graham? Might have to check if that one's still
it's
going.
It's one of my favourite. Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't mention it in particular because I wasn't sure if it's still going, although it does seem to be a stoic bursary in the sense that it's been available for a while. But yeah, there's some really weird and wonderful ones. I think the last time I checked the Scholarship Hub, or when I learned about the Scholarship Hub, they had the Graham bursary. So if your name was Graham, you had some additional funding. There was also a vegan one. So if you were vegan, potentially you could get more money in the pot. So again, I think that lots of students tend to think that to get a scholarship or a bursary, they may have to be Albert Einstein or they may have to be Usain Bolt, because I think mostly we think that they're only given for academic prowess or sort of Olympic style sports. But yeah, just to encourage people that there are some unique bursaries and scholarships available, so don't rule it out and do put some time in to research to see if there's anything eligible for you.
Absolutely, and that Scholarship Hub website is really, really helpful. Someone else has already done the collating there, so that's fantastic. Now, not that it's really your job to tell us this, but I thought I'd ask anyway, in case you had any ideas about what students could do to support themselves further financially if they're starting university or college.
Yeah, so I mean, my personal sort of first recommendation would probably be to budget accordingly. I did spend a stint working at Barclays Bank, where I was a relationship and student and graduate relationship manager. So I did do lots of overdraft extensions for students, and budgeting, I think, was always something that would come as a surprise when we were actually going through bank statements to assign costs to different categories. So I would definitely recommend that students try to budget accordingly. I believe that Martin Lewis does actually provide a budget planner for students on the Money Savings Expert website. Obviously, there's lots of budgeting tips available on there as well. Also on other websites such as Save the Student. So I think they talk about sort of student bank accounts and other sort of tips for budgeting, discounts and things like that. I'd also highlight that obviously many students may work part-time while studying at university. Obviously, if you're working part-time, that's not only helping you to subsidise your income, but that also helps give you some sort of valuable commercial skills during your studies. But obviously, that is a choice that every student needs to make dependent on their workload and their ability to work part-time. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, I'm not a financial advisor, so I wouldn't want to make specific recommendations because, of course, it depends on the individual. But just reiterating that researching all of the support available to you, making sure that you access it if it is available to you, as well as budgeting, are probably my two biggest recommendations.
That's really good information, and we won't hold you to anything. Thank you. It just put me in mind, actually, I think it was last year that we did a podcast called Cost of Living. We spoke to Caroline, who's a master's student, and she's got some really good tips for sort of hacks and things, some small scale things and some bigger things that can really add up and help you out in the long run. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you feel like you need listeners to be aware of?
I guess I just maybe highlight some of the resources available to students. Student finance can be a fairly complex subject in the sense that there's lots of information available, and sometimes you have to trawl through quite a lot of websites to get the answer that you like. So I would perhaps signpost to YouTube. We have an SFE YouTube channel, so there's quite a lot of videos already on there for academic year 24-25, explaining sort of how to apply, what your entitlement is and things like that. And there's also some sort of case studies for three students, I believe, who are in receipt of disabled students allowance, and how that has sort of affected or enhanced their student journey. So if you don't want to read some fairly in-depth documents, then you can just cheat and watch a 2-minute video. I'd also let you know that when you are applying for your finance, you will obviously get what we call a customer reference number, which you use to then access sort of your own customer portal. Again, within the portal, you'll notice on the right hand side that there's lots of signposting links that will take you to things like gov.uk. So if you want to know sort of how to upload evidence or what evidence you should be including, then there's lots of signposting to take you to the individual sections. And yeah, that's it really. I mean, the three main points that I like to leave everybody with are research. So again, reiterating on researching all of the support available to you and making an informed decision based on sort of your preference. Applying on time and right first time. So again, getting that application in ASAP. That way, if we do require additional information from you or something's not clear, we've got enough time to come back and request that from you. Again, you will see updates of this in your customer portal. So it will let you know if more evidence is required. Obviously, if everything's okay, we use a colour spectrum, so you'll see that it's all green. And then finally, with repayment, just reminding students that you do not repay until you have entered the repayment stage, and that your repayments are based on what you earn and not what you owe.
Those are three really good golden rules, and hopefully will take a lot of stress out of the whole process. And thank you so much for putting things so well, comprehensive but really understandable. So thank you. And of course, all of the links that Stacey May has mentioned, I will put in the show notes, so you'll be able to listen to the podcast and also just click on the links and see what we've been talking about. Thank you so much for that information. And
no worries at all. Absolutely my pleasure. And good luck to all those students with their education journey.
Thanks to all the people who've participated in the episode. And should you want to explore our resources further to discover the previous series of the HE Knowledge Hub podcast, just go online at nextstepssw.ac.uk. And you can follow UniConnects on social at nextstepssw. Thanks for listening.